Today's episode of The Scathing Atheist is brought to you by the new chain of creationist-friendly grocery stores, Ray Comfort Foods, where the vegetables are guaranteed to be divinely created in their present form, the canned goods are 100% abiogenesis-free, and there's plenty of Jesus in our cheeses. So shop at Ray Comfort Foods, because creationists do what they're told. And now, The Scathing Atheist.
I mean, just something as simple as having prayer in schools and having a daily Bible reading. Do you know back when we did that in schools, America was number one in the world in literacy?
I am Adam Reeks, and welcome to The Scathing Atheist, a far superior podcast than that which can be found at herdmentalitypodcast.com. I'm here to shamelessly promote the fact that many of my guests informed me that we did, indeed, evolve from filthy monkey men.
Thursday, it's September 12th, and it's the 12th anniversary of Heath's first 9/11 joke. I'm your host, No Illusions, and from sardonic New York, New York, this is The Scathing Atheist. On this week's episode, we'll be compassionate enough to cut the story with all the children's cancer jokes. We'll discover that there are levels of evil Pat Robertson can reach that would still surprise you, and Christian homophobes will create a Christian version of something that was Christian to begin with. But first, the diatribe. I was 12 years old, and my mom was talking to a couple of friends of hers about where they were when they learned that Kennedy got shot. One of the friends admitted that she couldn't actually recall where she was, and that freaked my mom right the fuck out. It was simply unthinkable in her mind that somebody could have forgotten that moment, and that was simply unthinkable to me. I couldn't comprehend of an event so potent that you'd be surprised if somebody failed to recall it precisely a quarter of a century later, and I continued to not comprehend that for another 13 years. It's damn hard to say that there was a silver lining to 9/11. I'll have enough respect not to try to rank it on a scale of tragedy, but it was the most horrible example of humanity that I've ever had to witness. The emotional reaction that so many of us shared that day can't really be explained rationally. That colossal mix of anger, fear, and impotence isn't something I'd ever like to revisit. But if there was a phoenix that rose from the ashes that day, it was the new atheist movement. The Four Horsemen all cite the 9/11 attacks as the impetus to their vocal opposition to religion. See, throughout the 90s, we'd all been force-fed this immutable dictum of cultural tolerance, so faith was off-limits. Sure, there were plenty of atheists out there, and there were plenty of people bitching about the evils of religion, but after 9/11, all of a sudden, those people were on TV. They were writing bestsellers. Suddenly, they were being listened to. See, they'd been right all along, but it took a few airplanes crashing into a few buildings on live television for a lot of people to realize that. Of course, references to 9/11 have fallen out of favor in the atheist movement. It's become fashionable to rise above that type of rhetoric. I've seen a number of prominent atheists vehemently disavowing the popular meme that reminds us that science flies you to the moon while religion flies you into buildings, or the one that shows the Twin Towers standing stalwart above the words, "Imagine no religion." Now, the platitude a la mode would tell us that the number of religious people who have flown airplanes into buildings is sufficiently eclipsed by the number of religious people who haven't flown airplanes into buildings. It would be too simplistic to say religion did it, wouldn't it? There were far more things contributing to the rationale of the suicide bombers on 9/11 than just the 6 dozen hotties they were about to deflower, so you can't blame religion, can you? And there's a lot there that I'll agree with. I'll agree that the overwhelming majority of believers are not suicide bombers, and I'll agree that it's way more complex than religion did it. I'll even agree that there were plenty of other contributing factors, and even granting all that, I will still blame the shit out of religion. Here's the thing. Convincing somebody to blow themselves up is trickier than you think. Now, without divulging any of the details of why I know that, consider the most gullible person you know and ask yourself if you think you could convince them that blowing themselves up would earn them a trip to a virgin-laden paradise. Tough, huh? Now imagine you had to do that without using religion. No one person could do that. It would take indoctrination from birth. It would take total control of what the victim learned, what they read, what they watched. It would take institutions to make somebody believe something so patently counterintuitive. And it just so happens that we have institutions that were designed for exactly that purpose. Modern-day religious apologists are fond of telling us that religion of today is nothing like the barbaric faith at its roots, and that's true to a certain extent in certain parts of the world at certain times, but that doesn't change the fact that the vehicle they're driving was originally designed to make people do what they were told to do, even, nay, especially, when it went against their own best interest. If you take out the poverty or the nationalism or the charismatic recruiter, you can probably still round up 19 guys willing to kill themselves in the name of God. But if you take out the God, your task becomes damn near impossible. So call it hyperbolic if you want, but I'll say that if there was any one lesson we could extract from the tragedy of 9/11, it's that religious zealotry isn't something we can afford to tolerate. You know, it occurred to me the other day that this whole rapture thing is probably rooted in the fact that Christians are so fucking annoying that even they fantasize about a world without them in it.
They're talking about your Jesus.
We interrupt this broadcast and bring you a special news bulletin.
Joining me for headlines tonight is cleverly introduced Heath Enright. Heath, are you ready to participate in pre-headline banter?
Witty response, Noah.
Laughter fading to witty retort, Heath.
Laughter indeed, Noah. I think I'll exercise my optional additional witty rebuttal here. At which point, you'll probably add a rejoinder.
Rejoinder ending in a half-assed segue. In our lead story tonight, the Vatican has recalled its ambassador to the Dominican Republic amid allegations of being a naughty, naughty nuncio. Archbishop Joseph Wesolowski was yanked off his post for getting his post yanked off and then winding up in the Yankee Post about it.
Pope Frankie Cranky about Wesolowski, Lanky Crank, Yankee Spanky, Hanky Panky would be the headline, I suppose.
Holy shit, dude. I'm surprised you didn't get skanky in there.
Shit!
You want to do it again? You want to go back? Rumors of the Archbishop's frisky business first arose in the Dominican press a few weeks ago, and the ambassador was whisked away before you could say official investigation, or at least before Dominican Attorney General Francisco Domingos Brito could say official investigation.
We atheist podcasters could so easily be foiled if clergy would just not rape kids. We'd lose a big chunk of material there.
Right.
So if the intrinsic value of not raping kids isn't enough, they should consider the strategic value, is what I'm saying. As much as it would hurt our stellar ratings, I'd give away all this fame and podcast fortune if the church just dialed down the rape, even just a little. I would give it all away.
Sounds fair to me, but instead, in yet another concerted effort to undercut their own "we really mean it this time" charade, the Vatican has once again moved quickly and decisively to protect an archbishop from prosecution for sex crimes again. With the ink on his new Get Tough on Child rapist legislation still dry, and Pope Sweet Franz Vestite winds up in the delicate position of explaining that when he said get tough, he didn't mean tough as in subject to all the same minimal legal standards as the rest of the world, mind
you. No, clearly not. I mean, when a senior official of an institution is caught covering up decades of child rape like this, there is a classy way to handle it. And I think Joe Paterno showed us that classy way.
God.
And in case that was too subtle,
no.
I'm saying take a cue from Joe Pa and go die quickly, everyone involved.
Wesolowski, who was nomadic even for a child-raping Catholic official, had previously served in Africa, Costa Rica, Japan, Switzerland, India, Kazakhstan, Tajikistan, Uzbekistan, and Denmark. But don't worry, I'm sure he only started fucking kids once he got to the DR.
You know, lots of people don't develop those kid rapey instincts until much later in life. It's a lot like scotch. You know, cock is an acquired taste. Best to start with 10-year-olds, then maybe move your way up to 12 and 15. 21 isn't usually worth the extra money.
And I know that officially I'm supposed to call him, like, alleged child rapist or whatever, but fuck that and fuck him. The Vatican is going to make damn sure that he only ever gets to the alleged child rapist level, so I'm just going to go ahead and call an unprecedentedly abrupt removal from a diplomatic post that exactly coincides with the opening of a sex crimes investigation, an admission of guilt, and I'm going to call this dude a dirty little child fucker. And if he doesn't like it, he can come get me. He'll find me in a neutral nation with friendly extradition treaties with the Dominican Republic.
Laying down the scathe.
Thank you, sir.
Oh, man. Do you think the court cases against these guys ever get settled by victims raping them back? Like a brown eye for a brown eye type of deal. You know, I think that would be fair. Reasonable system.
And in not all stories can be as lighthearted as the last one news tonight, a Bangladeshi court has indicted four atheist bloggers on charges of not properly cupping Muhammad's balls and saying things that hurt Allah's feelings, because apparently Allah is a sissy god and he can't smite these dudes on his own.
Are there a lot of Bangladeshi citizens reading atheist blogs and Reddit posts all day, trying to really hash out their true feelings on the origins of the universe? Is that what they do between state-mandated early morning Muslim prayer and state-mandated later early morning Muslim prayer? That's when they find their time to get to Reddit for the atheist section.
And despite the Vonnegutian nature of arresting people for insulting a fictional character, the air quote, assailants are facing as much as 14 years in prison after at least one of them already faced a brutal assassination attempt.
If you get 14 years for epistemological whistleblowing, what's the penalty for attempted brutal assassination?
Apparently the indictments you are asking for.
This is like if Edward Snowden found out the CIA was spending millions of tax dollars to track Santa Claus through the Arctic and chase Carmen Sandiego from Berlin down to Belize. I'd like to think we wouldn't have jail time and water boards on the table in that situation.
You never know. Now, before we move on to any more of the details of this case, I'd just like to say that I make a lot of jokes about how backwards and fucked up the U.S. judicial system is, but all things considered, I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under whoever the fuck I've got to say to not spend 14 years in prison, so help us, baby Jesus, amen. Now, the accused, whose names I won't butcher out of respect, have already spent 3 months in prison and are currently free on bail after pleading not guilty.
Honestly, prosecution by the Ministry of Silly Walks would be far less ridiculous in this case against these atheist bloggers.
And from the... It turns out there actually were worse things we could have done in Rwanda than nothing filed tonight. Blathering idiot and perpetual first runner-up in the Crypt Keeper look-alike competition, Pat Robertson, is working hard to remind everybody that he's not just a crazy, ranting, superstitious, senile old bigot. He's also evil.
First place for the Crypt Keeper thing must have gone to Lisa Robin Kelly from That 70s Show, I'm guessing.
Well, now.
Well, no, but I'm seeing even slightly pre-mortem. I think she could have won that. And for those listeners playing in Celebrity Death Pool Fantasy Leagues, she was 43 years old, so that's 57 points for the predictably departed meth enthusiast in standard formats.
And from Celebrity Death Pool back to Celebrity Death Monger, a documentary titled Mission Congo recently premiered at the Toronto Film Festival, and apparently it detailed how Pat Robertson used the suffering of the Rwandan people to perpetuate a scam almost as reprehensible as the whole Jesus thing.
It was hard to tell who cured more cholera and dysentery in the refugee camps because, you know, Doctors Without Borders was there at the same time as Pat Robertson's preachers. That's a lot of doctors and a lot of Bibles, so, you know, who's to say what was helping?
Well, according to filmmakers David Turner and Lara Zizek, it might have been fewer Bibles than you think. Robertson consistently exaggerated, distorted, and misrepresented the extent of his charity's work in Rwanda and used these lies and deceptions to bring in hundreds of millions of dollars, a very small percentage of which actually wound up helping anyone but Pat Robertson.
It's about time now. I'd normally compare him to a Bond villain or a Die Hard villain, but Pat Robertson is so much fucking worse because he's actually a real person doing this shit in reality.
Right.
He raised money from gullible rednecks in the American South to finance bullshit humanitarian aid to Rwandan refugee camps, but actually diverted the planes to service his secret blood diamond company. Not making this up. All he's missing is a disfiguring scar and a conspicuous red doomsday button that says do not press.
And if there's anyone out there investing in rapture button technology.
And just to fit the bad guy stereotype perfectly and get the 3-week timeshare on Secret Bad Guy Island, his covert African diamond mining company is owned through those offshore accounts they always use, cherry on top. I never understood these. Is the money hidden in the ocean? Why does offshore mean we can't find these banks? Yes, it's offshore, but we all still know where Bermuda is.
Now, of course, Robertson denies the allegations, and if you can't trust the guy who said last week that gay people in San Francisco have secret rings with AIDS needles so they can infect straight people when they shake their fucking hands, congratulations, your brain still works.
Obviously, that was a hoax. And if Pat Robertson had ever actually been to San Francisco, he would know that real gay people in San Francisco don't shake hands, they dick bump. So.
Well, to be fair, the ring idea would work for that,
get
too.
Get your facts straight.
And protecting the rights of children to be stupid this week is the Islamic Society of Tampa Bay Area, who are fighting for the rights of their children to be the most undereducated in the Florida public school system.
Muslims and Christians love to compete. I guess dumbest kids in Florida is as fitting a battle as any for them.
Now, this story revolves around a letter being circulated by said society that twists the shit out of Florida law to make schools think that they're under some obligation to let kids out of school whenever God tells them to. Titled Religious Observance Early Dismissal Request Form, the letter misrepresents several laws in an effort to excuse Muslim kids from school at 12:30 p.m. to pray during a special holiday called Every Friday.
What are we even talking about, though? How disruptive could it possibly be for the three Muslim students in all of Florida to leave early on Fridays?
Well, and as the group points out, education obviously isn't as important as everybody makes it up to be, or they couldn't get away with the grammatically dubious moniker Islamic Society of Tampa Bay Area. And from the Equal Opportunity Inequality file tonight, Pastor Makita Pennycook is begging for forgiveness from Jesus and people who really exist this week after sending out a controversial email that encouraged her congregation to try to look less black.
As in more Barack, less Michelle, like colored but not too colored?
No, I think Barack is still too black for her. The email in question actually said that the church should work to put its best foot forward and make sure that only the best people greet the parishioners on Sunday. And by best people, she meant the white people. And don't let the Caucasian-sounding name fool you. Pastor Makita Pennycook is a sister.
I'd like to read a quote I made up from the email. Quote, our white workers will be at the front, and our workers of color will have a separate but equally important job in the back of the house, much like a standard restaurant staff. End quote. Can't imagine how that stirred up any trouble here.
And while there is something of a silver lining in the realization that a black woman can hate the coloreds as well as any white man, I think we can all agree that it's very important that we continue to allow blacks in North Carolina to greet people outside of churches. Otherwise, they'll have nothing at all to do on Election Day. And in We'll Just Start Our Own Universe, and It'll Be Way Better Than Yours news tonight, the ongoing attempt to create a fully realized parallel reality for Christian children is one step closer to fruition this week with the announcement of the new queer hate and alternative to the Boy Scouts, Trail Life USA.
Wonderful. The Brokeback Mountaineer issue strikes again.
Scheduled for official launch on precisely the day that the Boy Scouts start letting the homos in, Trail Life USA promises to be, quote, stronger, safer, and more principled in every way, and co-founder and head redneck John Stemberger went out of his way to use hairy testicled phrases like masculine outdoor program when describing the program and how totally heterosexual it will be.
I think as a country, we're pumping out more than enough homophobic outdoorsmen without any additional youth outreach programs like this. There's an entire homophobic outdoorsman genre on television, and it's doing really well.
Holy shit, there is.
Yeah. There's an entire swath of this country. It's clever enough to see the amazing rhyme potential of hating queers and loving steers, but fails to see the irony of preferring livestock anus to human male anus. So there's a gap there.
And finally tonight in felonious coconut news, a delinquent droop was detained by detectives in the Maldives last week under suspicions that the tropical fruit was possessed by an evil wizard who intended to use the dark coconut arts to influence an upcoming election.
I'm not sure how we could possibly mock religion here, but you were saying evil coconut wizard? Go ahead.
Yes, well, this story begins, as magical coconut stories often do, when a concerned citizen noticed the suspicious brown orb outside a local school that was designated as an upcoming polling station.
Can a brown orb that is, in fact, a coconut be suspicious in a country that has palm trees and coconuts everywhere?
Well, either it was damn suspicious or this weird ass is just taken to closely examining the scattered fruits he comes across. But one way or the other, he noticed that a Quranic verse was etched into it, meaning it could only be the work of a malicious sorcerer.
Or maybe one of the 100% of citizens that are Muslim have Qurans lying around and have easy access to brown orbs all over the place.
Well, he saw something, so he said something. He contacted authorities who inexplicably did not tell him to go fuck himself and instead investigated the coconut. And according to the terminology in every news report we could dig up, the coconut was arrested.
It's textbook profiling of an infidel spy here. Brown on the outside, white on the inside. We've all seen it a million times on the New Jersey Turnpike.
A local wizard was summoned by the police to determine the exact mystical properties of the suspect and to counteract its evil powers, because apparently Maldivians are idiots. And before we get a bunch of emails about it, yes, Maldivian is the correct demonym. I looked it up.
And yes, idiots meaning stupid people that believe in voodoo coconut election fraud, just to be
yes,
clear as well. Also, I can't believe we didn't mention this yet, but how does election fraud make any fucking difference in a theocracy? What does that even mean?
Fraudulent by definition, I guess.
Right.
Well, that's going to do it for headlines tonight. Heath, thanks as always for joining me.
Great time.
And when we come back, we're going to be doing that bit you were really hoping we would do this week.
time your eyes are idle, you should read the Bible. It's the only moral guide you'll ever need. You think you found the contradiction, you must suffer some affliction. There ain't no fucking fiction there to read. And for the sake of your salvation, believe in biblical creation. Learn these Jewish incantations and magic spells. Why go through life just guessing when the Bible teaches lessons like the fabrics you can dress in to bypass hell? Well, God wrote that he wrote it. Inside that's clearly noted. Just ask yourself, why would he lie? God said that he said it. Don't you ever forget it. Can't be refuted, so don't try. Well, for the sake of your society, you really should try piety. It cloaks your improprieties, we swear. We'll accept your sinful vices, and my only real advice is, if you put your life in Christ, you're in the clear. And don't forget the basics, like the fact that God's a racist. It's alright to be a rapist if you pay. And if you've committed genocide, it's possible, it's justified. If God hates the folks who died, it's all okay. And the most immoral bastard gets forgiven if he asks for a quick favor from his master in a jam. What's that, you know, believer? Well, then give me that book and leave, sir. If I seem a little eager, it's 'cause I am. God insists, he insists it. I'm not sure how you missed it. Don't see how that's difficult to buy. God revealed, he revealed it. And I figured I sealed it. Can't be refuted, so don't try. God claimed that he claimed it. All this time he's maintained it. You keep debating and I don't know why. God declared he declares it. And he swore that he swears it. Can't be refuted, so don't try. Don't try.
Now it's time for the part of the show that comes next, listener feedback. This is the part of the show where we hope other people will write funny shit that we'll tangentially get credit for and act as though we have some kind of expertise or special knowledge that qualifies us to answer anybody's questions.
So our first email comes from Milton in Jersey City, and he asks, when is it okay to tell Christians to go fuck themselves?
Anytime after 3 p.m. and all day Sunday.
To clarify, anytime is okay. I think he means, when is it best to tell Christians to go fuck themselves?
Right, exactly. Again, anytime. And I think it's worth noting that Heath and I have a pretty lax personal go fuck yourself threshold, even for New Yorkers. So I'm saying it's okay anytime that you're saying to yourself, I'm done talking to this Christian and I have no interest in eventually having sex with them. Our next comment comes from the blog. Ken loves the show, but offered a not exactly correction to our story in episode 29 about the Salvation Army attending a South African porn convention to, quote, be available. Ken points out that the Salvation Army often goes to these types of events to be available for potential victims of sex trafficking and abuse, which we didn't mention because we were too busy making apartheid dick jokes.
And it's probably a good thing we didn't know about that angle. We clearly would have made sex slave rape jokes that were way worse than mere apartheid dick jokes. So ended up on the plus side there. Also, I don't recommend using our notoriously dick joke laden headline segment as a single source news program.
Should go without saying, yeah.
Our next email comes to us all the way from wherever Brandon is from, and Brandon writes to ask what he can do about the Jehovah's Witnesses that keep showing up at his door.
Oh, that's a good question. My first thought would require a wheelbarrow, a Holocaust cloak, and Andre the Giant, but he's dead, so that won't work.
So, do I want some literature about Jesus? No, but do you want some weeds? That'll often get them out of there quickly or make a sale.
Also, I find that showing up at the door wearing nothing but a necktie works with varying levels of success depending on what you tie it around.
Sometimes I like to lower a basket down from the second floor window and yell, "It puts the propaganda in the basket." They get the hose regardless. They usually leave quickly as well. It's a fun one.
All right, so here's my serious answer, though. I say you invite them in, you get them a drink, and then you let them give the whole spiel for their little cult. But the whole time you have this episode playing on the stereo in the background. You make sure it's loud enough that they can hear it the whole time, but not like loud enough to drown them out until you reach this part. And then you just crank it up really loud so they know that you've just been fucking with them the whole time and delay them from spreading their filthy virus to anyone else while you make them listen to the Bible song. And if they're still in the room, they can hear me tell them to go fuck themselves personally while they're gathering up all their Jesus stuff and leaving.
And that's all the feedback you get. If you want more, send us more questions like those.
And you'll find all the contact info on the contact page at scathingatheist.com. Before we lock it up for the night, I wanted to make a quick correction to last week's show. If you were looking for the interview I did on the A Matter of Doubt podcast and were surprised to discover that I was actually ex-Jehovah's Witness Kenny Weiland, that's because I fucked up the episode number. I said episode 54, but it was actually episode 56 that you wanted. Not that episode 54 didn't kick ass or anything, I just wasn't on it. And if you were looking for the live broadcast I did on C-Web Sunday School, well, sorry about that one, too. About an hour after I published the last episode, I learned that the time had been pushed back from 5 to 4:30. Sorry if you missed it live. It was a really fun panel discussion on the biblical prophecies surrounding the destruction of Damascus. It is available now on C-Web's archive, and if you'd like to catch up with that, you'll find a link on the show notes. And because apparently I am a total podcast whore, you can also catch me on the extremely funny Imaginary Friends show with Jake Farr Wharton in the next few days. I believe that episode is going to be up this weekend, and as soon as I know the date, I'll be posting it on our Facebook page, our blog, and our Twitter feed. But in case I forget one of those, you should probably just follow all three. Can't close the show without thanking Heath for everything he does to make this show have Heath in it. I also want to thank Adam Reeks from the Herd Mentality podcast for providing this week's very embellished Farnsworth quote. He's a rising star in the podcast community, and if you check out his show, you'll find out why. I can't recommend it enough if you haven't heard him already, and if you're presently kicking yourself for that oversight, calm down. You'll find a link to his show on the show notes for this episode as well. I also need to thank Heath's roommate for our kick-ass new logo. We're going to be setting up a cafe press site later in the week. If you're dying to get a customized Scathing Atheist t-shirt, coffee mug, iPhone cover, whatever, that stuff should be available no later than Sunday, so there's plenty of time to do all your Jesus Day shopping right there. And lastly, of course, I need to thank this week's most shining examples of humanity, Kevin, Richard, Brian, Andrew, and Magnus. Kevin, who once defeated the devil himself in arm wrestling and Scrabble at the same time with the same hand. Richard, a man whose bravery and intelligence redefines redefinition. Brian, who shall one day rescue humanity in its darkest hour atop his mighty steed, Poof the Fabulous Dragon. Andrew, whose army of robots spiders and Amazon love warriors are the envy of supervillains everywhere, and Magnus, whose name is so fucking cool that I don't have to add any imaginative descriptors to increase the perception of his awesomeness. These five noble philanthropists have conquered the final task in their path to glorification by giving us money. Not everybody has the gallantry, luminosity, and sexual magnetism required to give us money, but if you think you've got what it takes, you'll find the donate button on the right side of our homepage at scathingatheist.com. And if you'd like to help, but you only like us as a friend, you can also show your appreciation and help us a ton by swimming over to iTunes and leaving us a glowing review there. We really appreciate everybody who takes the time to stroke our ego and help our iTunes ranking by doing that. You can also help us out by telling your friends about the show or sharing an episode on Facebook or Twitter or whatever. Oh, and listen to us on Stitcher if you're into that kind of thing. If you have questions, comments, or death threats, you'll find all the contact info on the contact page at scathingatheist.com. All the music used in this episode was written and performed by yours truly, and yes, I did have my permission. We'll be right back.
dead on, balls accurate.
Nice. Is that a technical term?
That is a technical term.